but a time. Yeah, this is tea time. Yeah, making a difference. One cup at a time. Tea time. So be sure to grab your tea, grab a seat, and tune in to Miss Liz. Tea time. Making a difference. One cup at a time.
Well, welcome to Afternoon Tea Time. That's right. We are already on the second tea time. This week is just flying by. This year is flying by. I can't believe that I'm already getting ready for December's guest, the reunion show, everything. It is just flying by. It's like I close my eyes, I open my eyes, and it's at the end of the year, right? So this afternoon, I have the incredible Claire Kumar here, who is from Canada. So we have two Canadians this afternoon. This morning, we were in the United States. Tonight, we'll be back in the United States. But that's just the way it rolls in Miss Liz's house. We're all over the globe. So Claire Kumar is a productive catalyst, a high-sensitive executive coach, international speaker, and a podcast host. That's right, she's a podcast host too. So you might want to check out her podcast, because that's just the way we roll, is we support each other, right? Support for support. That's how we all grow together. So let's get the disclaimer out there. Let me give you a little bit about Claire, and then Claire's going to come in here and we're going to share a good TEA with all of you this afternoon. So if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel already, go and check out Miss Liz's Tea Time. Give that a quick subscribe. Ring that little doorbell and you will get notified every time there's an incredible tea time coming to you with different topics and different flavors. So the disclaimer for Miss Liz's Tea Time live show. Miss Liz myself is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any tea time show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith. However, may bring forward dialogues and opinions that are not representative of my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the given time of airing. All tea time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussions for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It is significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutical advice. If you have any questions about the disclaimer or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in today's show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you decide that the show is not made for you at this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later show at a later date and time. And again, all tea time shows are hosted on Thursday in 2023, unless it's a rescheduled tea time or a surprise tea guest that wants to come back and have a second cup of tea with Miss Liz, because that's how my guests roll. So now I'll give you a little bit more on Claire, and then I'm going to get Claire in here and I'm going to sip on my coffee. That's right, guys. I'm not drinking a tea. I'm drinking a coffee because I just need that little boost today. So I do have one cup of chicory coffee here. So Claire is a productive catalyst, highly sensitive executive coach and international speaker. Claire Kumar examines the intersection of productivity and inclusivity, paying attention to both being and doing. She inspires individuals to design for well-being and cultivates sustainable performance while avoiding exhaustion and burnout. Claire encourages leaders to design inclusive performance to invite the richest contributions from every member of their team. This is a topic Claire explores with innovator as host of the Happy Space podcast. And I just love the name of her podcast, The Happy Space, right? We need a little bit of happiness. Claire draws on a diverse corporate career that took her from Toronto to Tokyo and Montreal with equal experience as an entrepreneur. She is a sought-after media contributor to news and lifestyle shows, including the Huffman Post, Fast Company, the Globe and Mail, CBC Radio, The Social, and Marilyn Dennis Show. Ooh. Whether speaking to one person or a thousand, Claire loves inspiring massive shifts by inviting you to pay attention to the little things that make a big difference. She welcomes all highly sensitive professionals as well as those who want to love and support them to find community in the Happy Space pod. So let me get Claire in here and I'm going to sip on my coffee and we're going to spill some tea.
Hey!
Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Miss Liz.
It is an honor to have you here. And I am so glad because I got to meet Claire before the interview. So we do these pre-interview kind of thingies and get to know each other. And I was just honored that you wanted to be on this platform, Claire. So Claire, I want to start off with how I start off all the tea times. So Who was Claire as a little girl and who is Claire now?
Oh, me as a little girl. Blessed to be a daughter, one of three girls, to very loving parents. So a lovely home of mixed parenting. So my dad was from India, my mom was from England, and we moved when I was 4 years old to Canada. And I think growing up, I didn't feel like I belonged very much. So I was a girl that was a little bit at home, very comfortable, but outside in the world, not as comfortable. And we moved a lot. So 10 different schools growing up, which I can look back on now and see how it shaped me in positive ways. But then was pretty tough, always shifting and trying to figure out how to fit in. But I think as a young girl, curious, that stays with me till this day. Mischievous, I think that stays with me till this day as well. And conscientious. Those are probably some traits that I think have always been there.
And the reason that I go all the way back to the little child, right, is because we sometimes when we become adults, we bring that little kid into the work and the fields that we work in, right, and the people we connect with. You know, if we weren't heard as a child, then we usually work in services where we want to be heard or we offer services of hearing, you know, and the reason of understanding that little inner child within ourselves, right? So how did you get the name The Happy Space for your podcast?
Yeah, it was interesting because when I first started the podcast, I was really concentrating on that trait of high sensitivity and the highly sensitive person, HSP. And so I was playing, I love to think about wordplay and double meanings and subtleties. It's not a marketing strategy. I'll tell everybody right now, don't try and be clever, be straightforward. Don't do what I do unless you're really so amused by it. But Happy Space, so Happy Space podcast, there's the parallel with the HSP, which is a little subtlety. But really, I believe that everybody deserves to have a space in which they're comfortable enough to perform at their best. And unfortunately, our world is not designed for sensitive people. It's not designed for disabled people. It's not designed for elderly people. There are a lot of people for whom the world is a tough and taxing place. And the whole idea of Happy Space podcast today is looking at that intersection, as you said in the introduction, of productivity and inclusivity and bringing that together, because I think everybody deserves to be not so taxed and just trying to do their best and contribute to the world.
Well, and I think those are words we don't usually speak on, right? Is the inclusive, you know, including people, the productive, you know, we look at it as like a production line, you know, like a work line. Like you put the chocolate chip on the cookie, then it goes into the oven and then that one gets flipped and then that one goes into the box. And, you know, but we don't talk about humanity productivity, right? And I think that that's really important. And that's what you bring to the table, because I've checked out your podcast and I love the flow of it. I love the humor. I really enjoy listening to it because it brings the including people, right? Including all walks of life. And that's something that we both agreed on when we talked, was there's not enough of that in the world, right? Where we're supporting one another, no matter if you got disabilities or you're a little slower, you're oversensitive. Both of us were really highly sensitive people. So we want to be there to support people, but we also have to watch our energy levels as well, because we get drained so fast, right, Claire?
Yes.
So okay. I want to talk about that, because we don't talk about that enough, mm-hmm. right? Is the humanitarian production line.
Mm. Yeah, I think we've dismissed the fact that we deal with human animals. And so if we take our cues from animals to guide us, for example, one of my cats, Elliot, he's here for most of my conversations. He's passed out on my desk. He's flat out asleep right beside me right here. And if we look at the way animals live, they don't try and consolidate all their rest in one chunk. They take it when they need it. And they look after each other. I often liken the highly sensitive person. I use the meerkat as an example. And you can think of Timon and the Lion King, for example. You know, the meerkat standing on its hind legs and it's alert to sounds. It's sniffing the air. It's sensing motion. And there are a couple of meerkat that are on guard. So the rest of the mob can relax and play and eat and sleep and do all the other things that meerkats want to do. And their nervous systems get to relax. Well, the highly sensitive person in our world does not get a lot of invitation to relax in our modern urban landscape, that's for sure. So then we have to be responsible for designing it in ourselves, in a culture that's celebrating grit and hustle and just doing repeatedly. And like you said, that conveyor belt mentality, whereas we have to acknowledge that we're people. So I was talking to a friend yesterday who works in a call center, and in the particular work that she does, she sometimes has to handle a call about a bereavement. They are expected to get right back to the next call immediately afterwards. There is no recognition that that actually might be painful work for an employee to absorb all of that grief and expression of sadness or fraud, because she told me there's a good amount of people that she senses are calling in fraudulently. And even then there's moral injury against values clash and all of that. But there's no recognition of the impact to the soul or spirit of what we're doing, or human physiology, you know? So I think it's important for leaders and organizations to remember that we're human animals.
And I think it's okay for us to pause, you know, do the meerkat and take a nap, you know. I know in between my podcasts on Thursdays, I take naps in between. Like, people are like, oh, Miss Liz, what are you? I'm taking my 20-minute cat nap. Like, I'm just like, you know, I'll be back in the afternoon. I'll be back in the evening, but I'm going to take my nap because I need my nap. And we have to be able to have that self-care, you know, and just stop that production line for a rest, you know. And it's really sad how you mentioned, like, you know, the fraudulent, this, you know, we live in such a society now in the world, this is globally, where people feel that it's okay to hurt people, it's okay to use people, it's okay to burn their energy levels out, and then when they finally snap, crackle, pop and make these Rice Krispies, people are like, well, what caused this? Well, because you didn't give us that break. You just kept pushing, pushing, pushing.
And even to think about the leader in that case, the leader hasn't given themselves permission to take a break. So just apply more pressure and more pressure. And maybe even they're not making good decisions anymore because they haven't taken a break. So it kind of perpetuates.
Right. And it's just like a production line, and we become robotic. Mm-hmm. You know, and we start to turn cold towards things. I'm noticing that with that. A lot of the conversations around Christmas time, around this time of season, we're supposed to be really grateful because Thanksgiving's in October for Canada, but Thanksgiving today in the United States, where a lot of people are grateful for the day, but they forget the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, where's that gratefulness for the whole year? Like, mm-hmm. I get that we come together for a holiday, but where do we where do we support that production line for the year?
And do we ask for it? I was speaking to some leaders, firm leaders recently, and they were saying, oh, I'm so tired of people coming at me and complaining and just bringing one complaint after the other. I said, well, do you ask before they give you a complaint? Could they share something positive they're noticing? So that you don't get this onslaught. When you see somebody, you know there's going to be an even offering of what they've noticed. Because if they're noticing things, that's great. We want that. Yeah. But we also, as leaders, we need to say, please take care of my heart as well. Please take care of my soul in this journey. And realize I'm not a dartboard. I actually need some care in this process too. And I think leaders have to jump into this place of vulnerability to say, I need your help. And I think then we can start to see each other as humans that need support rather than levels. You're supposed to get it figured out because you're getting the big paycheck and I resent you a little bit for that. So I want you to shoulder it all. So,
right?
Yeah.
And that's what we've done is we put people on scales and levels, right? And we're forgetting that they're human beings too. They have their things that they have to go home to. And I love that you just said that, Claire, you know, give me something positive because we don't bring that to the table, right? We don't say, what did you see positive today coming to work?
Yeah, we have an expectation and it's not as full an expectation or a hope as we could. And I wonder if we peppered some gratitude thinking in our expectation, if we'd have better outcomes.
Right.
It'd be interesting to proactively select for it, you know, or design for it, invite it.
Well, it's the expectations of what society has also programmed us to believe in, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we really have to do that inner work. We really got to start mirroring that cat and saying, you know what, I need a nap. I'll be back, you know?
Yeah. And design it in. I mean, we're going to have an appointment. We had a time set to talk today. So I took a rest before and I may take another one depending on how the day goes. But designing in your day this opportunity to catch your breath. Yeah. And a lot of times now I see leaders planning 115 to 150% of the workload, just thinking that people are going to find a way. And they don't find a way. They find a way to eventually walking out the door if that isn't managed. And so I'm encouraging leaders to plan to 85%, not 100%, not 115, not 150 for sure, to allow some buffer and breath, just the way you'd want to have space in a room so you can move comfortably. You want to have space in your calendar so you can move comfortably as well.
I like that, buffer and breath. The double BB, right?
Yeah. It's about having moments of exhale. So it's about, again, it's all designed to calm the nervous system. So under stress, sometimes we can have a little bit of good stress and adrenaline. Let's play beat the clock and get this done. But when the stress crosses a line to be debilitating, we are stuck in analysis paralysis. We don't even know how to make a decision anymore. And we actually... We suffer in our ability to do even more basic things. So if we want our employees to be really creative forces, we better design mind wandering time, pure focus uninterrupted time, as much as we're expecting creative collaboration and so on. So yeah, understanding how the brain works and designing the day to support the way our brain really works for us is really key.
So Claire, you offer a bunch of things, like you're a speaker, you do workshops, you do coaching. So how do you take that buffer and breath?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think related to my high sensitivity is a high degree of creativity. And when you're creative, and I know from when I was working with people in their homes, you know, creativity means you're an idea person, you're connecting the dots, and you could do so much. It's a forever exercise in saying, what's the most important thing for me to do now in this moment or this year? I use a word of the year to help keep me focused on a theme, for example. And so there's constantly checking into the values that I've established and the goals that I've established for myself. And I use those to know my nose, to help me say what's in and what's out with less effort. And I'm not going to say it's easy, but I have to keep coming back to what I've already decided is important. And thereby I can let a lot of things go without struggling with the decision so much. It lightens every decision. If I really didn't know what was important and had to weigh everything out, as someone who likes to be with people and likes opportunities, but has to manage my energy, I'd be really in a cycle of difficult decisions a lot.
I like that you said no, because we talked about this before today's interview. You know, saying no to people is okay. You know, saying no to opportunity is okay. You know, because if we don't, we're going to burn ourselves out. We're going to be doing that 150% where you're saying come back it up to 85, you know. And I always tell people, I don't give 100%. I give 99%. That last 1%, I need that 1%. Like,
at least, right? Yeah. Because you need to talk about sustainable performance. And if we're, and the whole reason is, if we can keep giving, we can keep receiving, and thereby we end up living a fulfilled life. If we stop our ability to give through overgiving, overachieving, pushing, and then burning out, we have these peaks where we're really, really strong on being able to give and feel maybe fulfilled, maybe feel fried. And then we have these gaps where we're just in recovery and the engine is just overheated. So if we can pace ourselves a little bit and nurture our mind, body, spirit in the journey, we have a lot better chance to sustain that giving energy and thereby be more content, be more fulfilled all the time.
So Claire, when you go into a business, do you work like with the CEO, the founders, to find out what's burning out their employees?
I've worked at all levels in an organization. I've worked with new managers, VPs, senior VPs, and the C-suite as well. Getting buy-in from senior leadership is a real blessing, especially around the need to respect humanity. It's really a challenge though with a lot of leaders, because you can imagine anyone who's got to the C-suite has been quite driven and career focused. And in our culture, that means spending a majority of your time, most likely, on the work. We can look at Arianna Huffington as an example, right? To become so eminently successful in what she did, she gave so much to her job that she ended up falling on her face in her office and gashing her cheek open and needing stitches. Only then did she come to realize, oh, this is maybe not a good idea. And then she wrote the book Thrive, and she wrote Sleep Revolution, and she understands and then was now preaching about the need to respect the human animal, the biology, physiology, psychology of humans. And I think sometimes we have to fall on our faces before we catch it. And even myself, I acquired an autoimmune disease, which I have to live with and do my best to manage now. And part of what I'm doing is trying to put a spotlight on choosing to live caring and honoring for mind, body, spirit before we tax it so heavily that the body says no. As Gabor Mate, you know, when the body says no, there's a lot of science that will say that you place your body in constant stress and chronic inflammation, it's going to show up. And one day it's not a choice, it's an imperative to stop. And maybe while you're in the driver's seat, now's a good time to build practices that keep you there rather than, you know, in a more catastrophic situation.
So Claire, I know that you're really creative, and you got, your mind is like, it's really open. Mm. So how do you come into these businesses and services and say, you know what, this employee over here is burning out and is not even like, you can see it for yourself, but that person is not coming to the table and saying, I can't do it anymore. So have you ever gone into a business or service and noticed somebody and you're like, oh, there's a burnout coming?
Absolutely. And I've been in meetings where the person's talking about it and the leader still refuses to hear it. And I think my biggest struggle in life is witnessing a lack of empathy and compassion. It's absolutely deeply, deeply painful to me. And it happens often. Yeah. And I think I anchor in my coach training, which says, stay curious, Stay curious. So why would a leader be exerting more pressure on someone who's breaking? Why would a leader do that? And I think a lot of it comes back to probably not knowing that there are other ways to go about it that might be more effective, falling back into patterns of control, because they're normally in control and I call the shots and there's a lot of weight on those leadership shoulders. And so having a moment for compassion and patience, it can also perhaps open the heart up so much. And I think leaders have to armor up a little bit. They feel like they have to armor up to be able to get through the day. I'm not going to feel this. I'm not going to sense this. I'm not going to notice it. I'm just going to be eyes on the prize and there's going to be casualties and that's fine. And so it's an invitation to soften and feel, which is a slow process. You can imagine if we've spent decades finding and building a way to be as a leader, which is feels protective, but in effect is causing damage. Take some time and little ahas to be invited for little ahas all the time. And I have a program now that I'm working on to try and bring leaders step away from the need for control and be on the plane with their team and thereby also have the employees enter into a place of compassion for the leader. And compassion's got to flow all over the place in this model. And then the leader will also start to understand, I call it acknowledging the ask. When you ask an employee to come to the office for a meeting and it's an hour and a half commute each way and they have small children and they're gonna make an effort to come in, do we acknowledge the effort that someone's made to show up? You know, imagine you're holding a party and you realize somebody's driven through a snowstorm to get there. Oh my gosh, you would be absolutely impressed at the effort and everything it took for someone to show up, the risk they took, all of it. We don't have the same kind of consideration for humans and effort around work. We have a whole lot of expectation, but we throw out any kind of grounding in understanding what it took to actually show up.
Yeah. And we're not acknowledging it enough. You know, we're not being awakened. And I'm like you, there's not enough empathy out there. You know, it's that drive, right? It's that control. It's that I see my eye on the prize and I don't care who I lose for this prize. And we really got to bring empathy back. Like I get so drained out when I'm in a surrounding where it's just go, 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 go. And I get told, well, it's your mindset. That your mindset is what's slowing you down. It's not my mindset. It's me and my energy levels are not feeling this right now. I don't see the outcome. So my body is pulling away. It's removing itself. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with the mindset. It has to do with the energy level, you know, and these are the things that we're not speaking of. We're not speaking about the energy levels. Like when you go into a room and you're like, ooh, I don't know if I should be here, right? It's not because you're afraid. It's your body is actually preparing you that this is not a good place for you.
That's right. That's right. Which is my second, my E and T is energy.
And I know Claire a little bit because we had our little chit chat before. So this is why I'm able to open up the store a little bit more. And taking the time to get to know your guest and communicating with them and the process, you know, I didn't go in panic mode when Claire was a few minutes. Like I was just like right away. I was like, are you okay? Cause first it's about, are you okay? It's not, hey, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we get a lot of that from a lot of people where it's just like, hey, what are you doing? Like, you know, like, my first thing is, did something happen? Yeah. You know, we live in Canada and there's a snowstorm or something. It's like you said, like, how did I get there? Right.
Well, we're lucky we weren't an hour before there was a fire alarm going off in my building. And I was thinking, oh gosh, if this happened during the interview, it's really so loud and so many messages. You just have to wait till the whole thing's done. It's like a 15-minute event. And for listeners, just to know, I should have shown up 5 minutes before our hour. I showed up right at the time and I realized, oh gosh, that's not kind because I haven't let Miss Liz know that I was there ready, fully fully going to be there. No time for her to check sound with me, make sure I was, everything was good. I was like, I know I'll be fine. But I wasn't thinking, oh my gosh, yes, I needed to put it in my calendar for 15 minutes before. And so note to self, to look at that.
But Claire, that's how life happens, right? Mm-hmm. Is you didn't see, go on the attack. Hey, da, 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 da. You know, I came with empathy. Are you okay? Are you sure we're okay? Yeah. And I have it set up for all of my podcasts, guys. I don't just do this for, I do this for everybody. So when people are not here on time, like 15 minutes early, I right away, I go and I say, okay, There may be those people that are the last minute people, you know, they come in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is doom, you know, or something happened. You know, I've had guests where they had to reschedule because an accident happened or, you know, something came up in their life. I'm okay with that. And I think that as podcast hosts, we have to be open to that, right? We have to be open to understanding how the guest got there. What it took for them to get there. Like you were saying, acknowledge the ask, you know? And if we would have done this an hour earlier, like you said, fire alarm, well, we would have had a nice, entertaining interview with a lot of ringing and bells.
But I would have muted it for you. It is so horrific. I actually called my property management and said, I don't need it to be 85 decibels. For me to wake up, probably 55 is plenty. So it's exponentially, and I know there's a purpose to it, but there's so much need for nuance in the way we design things and the way we run things. And if we slowed down to invite that in, we'd have a lot more people's nervous system say comfortable.
Right. And the first time I seen the HSP, I was like, what is the HSP? I was really trying to figure it out because we have all of these LOLs, TBH, like all of these abbreviations. And I'm thinking, okay, I really had to think about it. And I knew what it was, but my brain was telling me to kind of understand the language that is being spoken in today's world.
Well, I think it's pretty uncommon. I haven't met anybody else that's put in their LinkedIn handle in the pronoun space, I'm using it for HSP to be able to say that this is something I want to raise awareness around, because I think it's important to design for neurological safety, sensory friendly options. Yeah. We have to raise the consciousness of this in general. One in five people at least falls into this space. And the other thing is, I think it will help people with whom I'm interacting to know that about me. So that, I mean, that's exactly why I would turn the fire alarm off, because it's so horrific, the sound, that anybody one in five who's listening to that will be, their nervous, their blood pressure is going up listening to that. And I don't want to be the spreader of that. So, you know, we can show some nice cat pictures or videos or something. Just like, we'll bring everybody stressed down. And I would have just put the camera on Elliot. He's right here. I'll just show you. That's Elliot. He's right here for, he's here for all of it.
So. Usually my Tinkerbell's on my feet or jumping in the window or she's in here too. So right now she's in her little cat bed taking a nap. So she's in the living room. She's still snoozing away. So, but it just, the animal, the energies of the animals around us as well, right? They calm us. So
they don't calm everybody.
Can you imagine what they go through when the fire alarm goes off?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because my cats are not, they don't seem to be bothered by that. They were bothered by my neighbors downstairs who put two condo units together and had to blast concrete wall out. They were really, as I was, immensely challenged by that. And there was no way to escape it. It was in the floor downstairs, you know? Mm-hmm. That bothered them. But fireworks and the fire alarm, so far, they're good. So far.
Oh, my Tinkerbell just goes flying all over. She's like, she knows that something's up, right? And she'll let you know. And then she'll come and nibble on your ankles. And it's like, oh, okay. If it gets too much, you know, if it's too long, she starts to panic, but there's no effect like right at the beginning, but after a few minutes, she's like, okay,
yeah, it's taxing. it's, yeah, it's starting to wear and fray those nerves.
Right.
Literally.
And it goes back to our energy as human beings, right? Is because we do have animal genetics in us, you know? So we can connect with animals. That's how we connect with the living being.
I think I'm sensing, I don't have proof of this, but I think the highly sensitive people might connect more than the people that are not as sensitive. And it's interesting because my partner is not highly sensitive. He has no use for my cats whatsoever.
And my fact, spouse is like that.
He would prefer that they weren't here. And I said, but they really provide a lot of value to me. And so it's not universal. And sometimes I think we think that the way I react to something, like I love my pink wall, I know that that's not everybody's favorite color, you know? So we have to have this understanding and appreciation that for everybody, we don't appreciate the same things.
I want to get into that because you're mentioning color and your favorite color is
peony. You know the flower, the peonies?
Yes. Yeah. So I was like looking because I wear to honor my guests their favorite colors and some of my guests give me some colors that I just don't, I'm like, I got a mixed match. And so I tried to find the best pink that I have and I noticed that you're wearing the pinkest and I'm just like, that's a beautiful color. We don't talk about colors, right?
We don't a lot. There's a lot of people who are comfortable, especially in the darker months, black everything. And I really feel like outside has gone very, especially in here in Canada, all the life is kind of goes out of the plants and everything's going dormant and it's a little dreary. Like we need color more than anything just to feel alive. And I can see your scarf too has a lot of color. It's just gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. I like color. Like I like to bring in the color and I like to be creative as well. And I think that's why we connect so well, Claire, is because we have that empathy for each other, you know, where two individuals are connecting and trying to bring a lighter weight to the world through conversation and that.
Well, you know, I'm just on that thought of color. It didn't really hit me until, gosh, about 15 years ago that I realized that when I walked into a room wearing a color, a powerful color that goes with who you are, it changed the reaction of other people. It was like, for the pet lovers out there, it was like I was carrying a small dog and people would light up. I would see the energy transmission through color. And I thought, oh my, this is a powerful tool. And so for the past 15 years, I've been playing with color and I have my favorites and I'm probably known. I'm expected to show up in color. I'm expected now. So it's a powerful tool. If people are a little cautious about it, find a color that really lights you up. You probably have an affinity for it. And if you wear colors that suit you, it actually makes the other person feel more comfortable too. So tuning into what colors really work well for you is a really, really good thing to do.
Well, you have something on your website called The Power of Color, and it's with the glasses. And yeah. I love it. I'm just like, those glasses are awesome. My glasses are so expensive for the prescribed ones, right?
These aren't. I'll just give them a little plug because I have multiple colors of these glasses, multiple pairs. The company out of Australia, they operate in Canada, New Zealand, and Australia at last check, and it's called Dresden, Dresden. And they're plastic, recycled plastic lenses, and very, very inexpensive. And I think that the whole eyeglass world has been disrupted. But these, you can, they'll lifetime warranty it. I drove. One of them fell out of my swimsuit when I was biking to the pool and I biked over it and they replaced the frame. They're like, no, it's warrantied. It's like, no problem. We'll replace it. The pin broke and the arm twisted a little bit because I biked over it. And an amazing company, you know, for the planet and then also for the pocketbook. So
I was just like, oh my God, glasses are my thing, right? Like when I go to pick my glasses and I know I'm going to be wearing them for a long time, I want color. I want stuff like these ones. When you take pictures, it actually looks like the glasses are disappearing. because they look magical, right? And I'm just like, oh, I like that. And I actually picked these glasses that I'm wearing this time by myself. Usually I have somebody, okay, so what does that look like? Does that look nice? And I'm just like, no, I like these ones. So when I came home, everybody was like, whoa, that's a little different. And I was like, yeah, I know, right? They're cool.
And they suit you nicely. Yeah.
And they just kind of disappear when you take a picture, right? So it kind of looks like you're wearing like half a lens, like half a glass. So it's pretty cool. So
I
just think colors, we don't speak of colors enough, right? We don't speak of the presence that it brings, the energy it brings. You know, like you said, there's a lot of black and white. Let's add some pink. Let's add some blue, some green, some yellow, orange. My favorite colors are orange and blue. So you'll see me. Yeah. And she has an orange. See?
Yeah. I brought this back with me from Sevilla. There's a courtyard outside of the cathedral full of orange trees. And they were selling one of these ceramic oranges. And I have it on my desk because pink and orange are my favorite too. You can see in the little picture there of me, orange in the background, orange and pink. I just think there's almost this tension and warmth in both of those colors and a lot of energy.
So we have a question here for you, Claire. I'm going to pop it up so you can see it. I have a question. You speak about burnout. So I ask, what the difference between experiencing a burnout and experiencing a sensory overload?
Oh, great question. I would say that a lot of sensory overload might lead towards burnout. Burnout is a deeper experience where you've been overwhelmed for an extended period of time, and you are no longer able to process information very well. You feel beaten by it, if you will. Whereas sensory overwhelm or sensory overload could be temporary, and then hopefully you have an opportunity to recover from that and then bounce back. Burnout, there's no bouncing back. It's a longer, slower road to recovery. And so we want to prevent burnout by designing in recovery from all of the stresses. That's what sleep is for. Sleep is healing time. And if we deprioritize sleep, we will see it show up in our inability to make good decisions, whether it be food, nutrition, handling relationships well, all of these things. We need to really think about how we are navigating and designing our daily experience so that we can preserve that energy, and building rest and recovery in is absolutely critical.
I'm just going to pop this up again. Adam has another question. Yes, we're struggling with an overload when it comes to our autistic son who is obsessed with math.
I can imagine. So what I would wonder that when the obsession is going to lead to brilliant holding of attention, potentially hyper-focus or enthusiasm, and perhaps designing in a slowdown period and a sensory rebalancing opportunity after that, teaching mindfulness, breath work, body calming, body soothing practices, and weaving that together with the excitement about math. I don't ever want to dampen enthusiasm. I love it. But how do we also temper it and invite a return to a calmer way of being so that there isn't this constant stimulation, that we also learn how to bring the body into a more soothing place as well?
So what tools and tips could they use to help with
the overall? I think the most powerful portable tool is the breath, is actually using our own physiology and knowledge, that breathing deep, deep, deep into the belly. And if you're going to focus on anything, focus on a slow exhale. Those two things alone, doing that repeatedly, you don't have to remember numbers. You don't have to remember anything. Then deep breath through the nose, slow, slow, slow down the exhale. Your nervous system is going to calm. Do that 5 to 10 times. You'll be a different person within less than 2 minutes than you were. And so that's one of them. I mean, forward fold, a lot to do with the vagus nerve, and calming the body. So forward fold is good. There's a yoga position called child's pose where you're curled up in a ball, essentially your head down on the floor. And there's a full body relaxation. There's a lot of benefit to not holding yourself vertical. I do a lot of my meditation lying down because I'm at my desk sitting or standing for most of the day. And you know what? I just want to lie down sometimes. And there's nothing wrong with breath work, meditation work, relaxation. Like, I think there's an aversion in our society to inviting people to recline, where we need to celebrate the recline and in plane seats and park benches. You know, I've been studying park benches and just as it happens when I'm traveling. And I noticed in Luxembourg and I've noticed in Paris, both chairs that are not upright chairs in parks, they have the closest we think we have is an Adirondack chair or a Muskoka chair with a bit of a recline, but these are actual chaises where you get to put your feet up as well. And that to me, we need to build in more invitations to really let the body rest. And we need to see them. We need to see them in our parks. We need to see them in our airports. We need to see them at work.
Right. Well, we have all these chairs that are just straight forward, right? Like, well, it's that productive line again, you know,
we're all Protestant work ethic chair,
right? Like,
yeah. Maybe we can actually invite the rest and relaxation that the human body needs as well. And we need to see it. That's why I'm saying it's a design problem. The design opportunity. That's my next talk. I host talks once a month, and the next one coming up on is design is an inclusivity is a design opportunity, because I want to reframe some of these challenges I see with what's missing as well. What could we do? We can have drone celebrations instead of fireworks celebrations, so we calm down the nervous system. We could have different thresholds on hand dryers and get rid of some of the hearing damaging hand dryers, especially in an acoustic tiled space, which amplifies them. And then we throw four dryers in the same space and I run out of there holding my ears. You know, we can look at the sensory costs to what we're implementing. And there's a whole lot of opportunity to design an inclusive from an accessibility point of view physically, and also from the nervous system point of view, which has been largely missing in our world. We just think more is better. We think more is better and faster is better, louder is better, more spices on the Doritos is better, but it's not for everyone.
Right. Yeah. How hot can we get it? Like, you know,
more is better. It's a real thing. I mean, when I lived in Japan 20 years ago, they had vending machines. They do now today. And they would have a can of Coke at 330 milliliters and a can of Coke at 500 milliliters for the same price. Well, in North America, you'd be like, I'm not buying the one for less with less in it. I'm buying the bigger one because more is better. Over there, you would buy the one to match your appetite. And so we have a lot of problems because we're sold more is better. Big size it up, make it bigger, like, and value pricing, you know, buy four and save money. I think we've totally missed the message. I love Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism. Figure out what is enough. It's going to calm everything down if you define what's enough and then design for that. Let go of the rest and buy the ketchup bottle that fits in your hand comfortably, not the 2-liter one that your kids can't actually manage and then catch everywhere.
Right? They yeah. can't even use it to squeeze on their eggs and that, or, you know, or their grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, mama, can you help me? Like, you know, yeah. I think less is more. You know, we got to stop with the more, like less is more. You know, we have a couple comments here from Adam that I'm just going to read out. He said definitely in schools also that they're needing more relaxation classes. I know back when I was in school, we had nap time. We were actually had nap time. They removed that from the schools now. I'm not sure why, but we used to actually have where they turned the lights off in the classroom and we had to put our heads down on the desk and we had to recharge ourselves. So
gave the teacher a break too, I'm sure, right? Everybody needed a sensory. Right. And now, you know, as someone gives training workshops, sometimes full day events, I design it so that the breaks are there. You know, one of my full day workshops, I do 3 hours and 3 hours essentially. And in even in between the 3-hour session, I have a half an hour, and I was staying on site in the afternoon. I went and laid down for 20 minutes on my bed so that I could come back for the last hour and a half. And you know what? People don't have it. They don't have enough. Our brains do not want to listen and learn for 6 hours a day. It needs to be designed less. We're really best between 4 and 5 hours at the most. And yet we try and cram in. And it's like, well, you're going to do a 7.5-hour learning day. Sweet mama. No, nobody wants that.
The last hour and a half, I haven't even taken in because my brain just.
Yeah, it's done. It's done. So unless there was an hour of go outside, rest, relax, lie down, a stop thinking break. I put those in all my workshops. There has to be a brain break.
Yeah.
If we don't do that, we're dismissing that human animal. So I get to walk my talk a lot. When I show up now, it's designed so that I and the participants are actually going to retain what we go through.
Right? We all could take a break, you know, and we even when we're podcasting, as podcast hosts, Claire, you must get this too, where people are like, let's just go, 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 go. You know, like interview after interview after interview. I went to one workshop last week, and they had a bingo sheet so that you could win a prize. And one of the bingo slots was on over 100 podcasts in a month. I'm thinking that is overload big time. And do you even benefit from doing so many? Because are you actually just repeating like your programming, right? Like you're just robotic. Or are you actually getting an impact from, and I was blown away. I was just like, this workshop is not made for me. Thank you. I appreciate it. But I'm not going to push myself to that limit where I'm going to do 100 podcasts in a month. Yeah.
Again, more is better. That's more is better. More is better. You're succeeding when? What if I had one knock it out of the park podcast with the right host and the right audience so that people who are interested in what I have to say, if the connectivity is there versus 100 podcasts that are just with a miss audience? I think honing in, being intentional and respecting, designing for this fluctuating capacity that we have, and designing for our priorities is the place to start. And you've got to design just honoring who you are and your ability to sustain your energy for it, for sure. That sounds exhausting. And it sounds like you wouldn't be doing anything else, which for someone who thrives on variety would be boring, I think. I mean, could be a maybe. Hopefully there would be enough really like you, an experienced podcast host, so you know that you're having a real interesting conversation. That would be fabulous. But if it's explain to me why you're doing this and what's your 3 points, that would be pretty tiring, I think.
Well, and it's like you said, right? And what else are you doing? There's only so much time in 30 days. Yeah. So that's all you're doing. And if you're doing the longer podcast, that's a job and a half. You know, but if you're doing like the 10-minute podcast or the 20-minute podcast, I can see where you're getting 100 in a month, but that's still overload, you know. And I really wanted to have Claire on here because she's a Happy Space podcast host, and the Happy Space is taking time, taking that break, you know. So I really want to, our time is just flying by, like we're just having an awesome time here, conversation. The time is just going by. But Claire, I like your flow of the podcast.
Thank you.
Because the conversations are real, they're authentic, and you're taking the time to actually know the guest. And I think it's really deeply important for podcast hosts out there is take the time to understand why you're having guests on your platform. And are they aligning with your message? Let's stick with the alignment as well, right? Because that's part of the productive, you know, getting a good production out is the alignment.
Yes.
And it's okay to say no. Like you don't have to say, I want to be on this one. I want to be on this one. I want to be on this one. Make sure your alignment and your mission and vision are staying the same. That is key points for a podcast host. You know, we really got to stay to our mission. We can't be switching it up and switching it here and switching it there because then we're just confusing our listeners, right?
All my guests, pretty much, I've gone out and found them through a lot of times on LinkedIn, or I'll be at a speaking event. So I know they're a great guest because they speak so well. And they've got something that I think my listeners would benefit from hearing. And so the alignment is tight then. I just had a beautiful request to be on my show yesterday. And I said, you know, it's not a fit right now. I'll keep you in mind, but you're doing very valuable work. So I love that, but it's not a fit for my show right now. So I'm not going to bring it in just because somebody asked. No.
And I like it. We're able to say that no, right, Claire? Because we're not, you know, we're high sensitive people and we need to watch our energy levels. We have to say, you know what, this is not good for me. It's not that I don't support you or your platform or your mission. It's just not good for my energy and my level.
I just was talking with my assistant this morning and we were talking about the image for the Zoom call that I host. I call it Happy Space Hot Topics. I host them every month and it's open for anybody to jump in. The next one we're doing, as I said, was the inclusivity as a design opportunity. And I was talking to him as we were preparing for this about we need an image to go with the marketing. And one of the conversations that I stumbled into was one of our local pools has not just gender neutral bathrooms, but the whole shower area and everything. They've got one now. And I thought, wow, I want everyone to feel safe. And as a woman with a curtain in a gender, every gender bathroom, I don't think I felt safe. So we were talking about bathrooms. And so in the image, he'd found a picture of bathroom stalls. And it was really, he'd been insightful because the stall doors were so short, not tall enough and not low enough to the ground that you were like, ooh, I don't think I'd want to be in there. So he was really astute, but the picture was so grimy and dirty looking. We can't use that on our marketing because that picture alone is going to make people uncomfortable. And they're just going to like, well, maybe he's right. Maybe people would look at it, but why is this here? But I was like, no, we're gonna be always creating something that people are not gonna get stressed at by looking. Emotionally, I want to trigger emotionally for empathy or curiosity, but I don't want to trigger for aversion because of stress. Like that's something I want to avoid. So we have to be really thoughtful. What are we putting out in the marketing as much as the message too?
Yeah, we have to watch our branding and that as well.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And who we sit with as well, because it also shows other guests and that are coming. Okay, this is the mission, this is the vision. I get it, you know.
Yeah.
We're almost at the end here. We only got a couple minutes left, but I want to get your tea really quick. I got the second one. I got the energy. I want the tea and the A before we wrap it up, and then your final words, Claire, and then I'll be back at 7 p.m. with last tea.
Thank you. Yeah. So I loved that cup of tea. Number one, being born of Indian and English parents, it's always tea time in my world. But the tea I've been working with in my own business has been part of steam. But if you ask me to simplify what steam is, I say, don't run out of steam. So steam is space, time, energy, attention, and money. But I think the most important three and the ones you don't get to renew are your time, energy, and attention. They're there to be used carefully. You can figure out space with enough money. You can figure out those two. But the time, energy, and attention are really, really important resources to respect and design for.
Absolutely. And I love it. I love how we slid that tea in right at the end, right? So Claire, if anybody would like to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
Oh, thank you. You'll find everything at clairekumar.com. And if you're listening and not watching the screen where you can see my name, Claire is with no I. I joke, no third eye. And Kumar is like Harold and Kumar, the movie. So clairekumar.com. And then look for the happy space sign at the top. That's where you'll find the podcast. You'll find a quiz around being a highly sensitive person, which is very short to take, but will give you an idea of what it is to be highly sensitive. And my latest creation, which I hope everyone can use, it's free, it's called the Work Style Profile. And it's a questionnaire that invites you to articulate the conditions that invite your best work. So if you want to keep being generous and therefore giving and receiving and having that fulfilling life, really get clear on what makes you comfortable to be keeping giving, and that happy space work style profile is the key. It's companies are starting to pay attention and bring it in their onboarding process, and teams can understand, teachers can use it with their students, family members can use it together to understand, you know, with your, I think it was Adam has an autistic child, you know, having a discussion, what makes you feel most comfortable, and designing, building those as design parameters to invite that best performance. I'm hoping it'll be a power tool for everyone out there.
Well, thank you so much, Claire. It was an honor to have you on Tea Time today. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep being in that happy space, because I love what you're doing. You know, let's just keep supporting one another and let's make a difference together. I will be back at 7 p.m. and we're going to be doing social skills with children's books with Jim Price at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're going to be making a difference today with inclusive productivity, diversity, understanding, and social skills is something we don't really talk about much. So we're going to be bringing that at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the last tea time of this week. I'll see everybody at that time for the last one.